This is a Suno India production, and you're listening to Indian Economy Explained. The Indian economy is in the doldrums. The Indian economy was already in a bad shape before the COVID-19 pandemic struck. In 2019, India's gross domestic product, that is GDP growth, was 4.18%, lowest in that decade. The coronavirus pandemic and the nationwide lockdowns spiraled the economic downturn into a full-fledged economic crisis in the country. India's GDP went through its worst phase of -7.3% in 2020 and is still struggling to recover from it. The World Bank has also slashed India's 2021 to 2022 gross domestic product growth forecast from 10.1% to 8.3%, which means India's GDP will grow with 1% growth. Hi, I'm Kunika Balhotra, Research and Communications Officer for Suno India, and your host for this episode of our new series, Indian Economy Explained. This series will bring to you insightful discussions with economic experts, professors, and researchers to keep you up to date with the latest economic developments in the country. To know more about India's economic growth story, the impact of COVID-19 pandemic on our country's gross domestic product, and how the economy affects the GDP, I reached out to Dr. Biswajit Nag, Professor and Head of Economics Division at the Indian Institute of Foreign Trade, to understand why GDP figures and its sharp fall in recent times matters to every Indian.
So how is a country's GDP calculated? And especially in a country where the economy depends on retailers and service sectors rather than actual production.
Actually, you know, there are many methods in which GDP is calculated. In case of India, it is generally done in two ways. One is basically through adding the gross value added, what we call GVA, from different sectors. So that's basically the income generated from different sectors. And another method is what we call expenditure method. So in value add method, which is basically a factor cost, so it's based on, say, what is the income coming from agriculture, from manufacturing, from services. So in general, there are a few common sectors that whenever you read any newspaper or any discussions on GDP just after the budget, so you'll find out there are mostly 8 sectors on which actually India is focusing. One is agriculture, forestry, and fishing together, then mining and quarry, then manufacturing as a whole, electricity, gas, water supply, then construction, and then trade, hotels, transport, and communications, and then financing, insurance, real estate, business services, and then community social service and personal service. So this is basically we're collecting the income. As you know, the GDP is basically how much is the country has generated in terms of value, the value of the products in a particular year. So these are the sectors from where the incomes are actually being calculated. Another way of looking at it is basically from the expenditure side. So which is basically the market price, how much actually being spent. So it could be like, consumption expenditure by individuals. So what we call private final consumption expenditure. There could be government expenditure. And then gross fixed capital formations, that means how much assets has been built up in the country in that particular year. Then there are exports, imports, some small discrepancies and changes in stocks. So these are the two ways basically we try to measure basically the GDP in a particular year.
Yeah, so now that you have talked about GDP, could you tell me how does a country's GDP affect the common citizens and the investors?
Yeah, GDP number, which is just like tip of the iceberg. It says a lot of things, at the same time it doesn't say anything because it's just a number. Most of the time, you know, what you see in the newspaper is the GDP growth rate. Say, for example, currently India's GDP in the last quarter, you know, reduced by more than 10%. And we are expecting that at the end of the whole year, 23% actually, And the end of the whole year, it could be maybe more than minus 10% GDP will get reduced. So common people actually keep in mind that the growth figure, but you know, how actually it affects the common people and how actually it affects the investors. So let me just look at from a different angle. If you look at the GDP figure, which is basically how much of the income of a particular country has increased in a particular year. So forget about a country, think of an individual. One individual's income has increased by 5% or 10% in a year. That means that individual has worked and worked hard to earn that money. So that means if you look at from a country's perspective, so that means country has really worked well so that its overall income has increased. So GDP does not tell us the distribution aspects, that how much has been earned by farmers, how much has been earned by salaried classes or the business people. It basically tells you the overall. But if you just go one step ahead, GDP is calculated as a summation of different incomes generated from different sectors, which is value added, what we call. So in that case, what will happen if you just go one step ahead and try to find out what are the incomes of different sectors, then actually you will get a better picture. So you can find out how much was the growth in agriculture, how much is the growth in manufacturing, how much is the growth in trade, depending on their share in the GDP. For example, you know, maybe agriculture share could be around, say, less than 20%. Manufacturing share could be around 17%. Okay, industry as a whole, maybe around 30%, which includes mining, quarrying, manufacturing, electricity, constructions. Those are all part of industry. So when we see that which sectors are growing, so if we see construction sectors growing, that means the people who are involved in construction sectors, their income has grown more than maybe the other sectors. So the people who are actually working in this sector, whose livelihood depends on those sectors directly, indirectly, when construction sector is actually growing, so their lives are actually getting some kind of positive benefit out of it. That's the way basically the common people's life is actually get influenced by the GDP figure. So you can understand a bit of overall improvement in the life. This is a gross figure. You will not be able to understand the distributional aspects of it. Coming back to the second part of the question, which is how actually investors actually are getting influenced. Investors, you can think of a domestic investor, you can think of foreign investor also. Now, for foreign investors, definitely GDP growth rate is a positive number because they do not know the country much. So they will be very much influenced by some of the, you know, basic indicators of the economy, which are highlighted in international media, or sometimes some research is done by some agencies. They will tell that this will be the projected growth, and this growth will be coming from these sectors, as I just mentioned about the construction sector, or it could be from the trade sector. So the foreign investors will then find out, okay, these are the sectors which is growing in that country. And if the ease of doing business is relatively better and they find confidence in that country, so they will be positively influenced. They might take a decision to invest in that country. For the domestic investors, they are inside the country. Many of them are already invested in different sectors, so they have better information. So just GDP growth rate is not that influential on their investment decisions. Their investment decisions depends on much deep-rooted understanding of the economy, because sometimes what happens, there could be a sudden rise in one sector and then it tapers off because of certain reasons. And that information that they are very much there in the domestic investors. But overall, positive GDP or higher GDP growth rate is having a kind of a positive influence on the investor.
So you talked about how it affects the common citizens and the investors in the country. Now, could you tell me how it is linked with employment, like the economy? How does the economic growth affects employment in the country?
If you recall some time back, I think the last decade, we had a situation what we call jobless growth. There is a high growth in India, but employments are actually not growing. Right. And there could be a country with relatively lower GDP growth, but higher employment could have been generated. So as GDP is calculated from the contributions of different sectors, that means the performance of different sectors are influencing the overall GDP figure. So that means if a particular sector is doing well, so that means there could be a possibility of employment generation. I'm saying just a necessary condition, but not sufficient. Okay. For example, suppose there is a high productive sectors due to high technology and sophisticated technology, more automations are there. So that sector perhaps, generating a lot of growth, but employment is not growing significantly. Let me give you an example of two countries, which generally I share in the class, that, mid-2000, this example came up. Two countries, one is Malaysia, another one is Argentina. Okay, so Malaysia actually focused on labor-intensive goods as their production base to increase the export, so which includes electronics. Actually, electronic sectors can generate a lot of employment because at the end of the day, a lot of assembling activities are required for which not much of skill is required. For example, a lot of office equipment require fax machines, counting machines, mobile phones, telephones, okay, radios, televisions, cameras. Okay, so all these electronic goods require at the end a lot of, bringing two many things together. It's just like, the Lego toys. There are components, there are parts, and you are putting them, fitting them, and making the product. So Malaysia has got a huge advantage of linking the growth with the employment. On the other hand, Argentina, another country, which focused on high-skilled and semi-skilled sectors for their growth, which generate jobs for relatively skilled workers. Okay. But it doesn't generate that much of jobs towards the people who are the lower strata. So that you can get a lot of good jobs for in India when this condition, the talk of jobless growth came up. So there are a lot of jobs for IT sectors, but the other sectors are not growing much. So GDP and employment, sometimes people think that they are moving together in the same directions, but it may not be. So these two examples tells you that GDP could be a necessary thing, but it is not a sufficient thing. One debate which is very much there in many parts of the world and very much in our economy, that if you do a lot of automations to increase the productivity, to increase the GDP, will there be job losses? So will that take out many people? I'd like to bring back to the memory that when typewriters were actually been taken out and computers came in, the same debate came up that it will actually reduce a lot of jobs, but it didn't happen. It created new kinds of jobs. Okay, so it is just a matter of transition that sometimes you require how fast people get the skills to the new sector. So that particular thinking process is very important so that we can address the job losses. The last point I'd like to highlight here, which is connected to COVID or any kind of economic crisis, what we have noted in the world that when GDP is growing, the employment growth is relatively slower. Okay, because GDP growth is mostly taking the advantage of productivity growth due to technology. But when GDP slides down, whether it is in 97-98 Southeast Asian crisis, whether it is Latin American crisis, whether it is subprime crisis, or even during the COVID crisis, when GDP goes down, the employment goes down faster than the GDP. The way the employment is rising and the way the employment goes down had a different directions altogether. So there is a complex relationship between GDP and employment.
So sir, now that you mentioned about COVID, the India's economic growth has been declining from the past 4 to 5 years. And now because of COVID, we have GDP negative. So what has gone wrong in these last years, which has stopped India's growth story, except COVID?
India's case is a complex case. Okay. Because India's GDP started going down before COVID. And COVID has accentuated that particular crisis. Okay, so that particular thing you need to keep in mind when we are comparing India with other countries. If I go back to basic numbers, since 2016-17, government was trying to make a lot of reform, but every reform has a kind of a friction it creates in the economy. So you need to take into account that frictions into account before you actually try to understand what will be its long-term impact. Okay, so that is one aspect. But apart from that, more seriously, what happened? Government tried to focus on industry under the programs like Make in India and now even in Atmanirbhar India. But at the same time, India was much more open economy as compared to 20 years back. So open economy means there'll be a lot of components, parts, or even final goods will be imported. And what we expected that, after importing a lot of such components, there will be a lot of industrial activities and India will be able to produce new kinds of goods and export to the rest of the world. So we'll import components from Thailand, Vietnam, or from China, and we'll export to Middle East, Africa, Europe, or US. But that didn't happen. So our industrial growth was actually less than what we expected, what it should have been. And that's one particular thing. Agricultural sector was also not performing as per the expectations because the agriculture sector has required a lot of reforms. And one of the things that there's a lot of wastage of agricultural products in India. Productivity is less. Mechanization was not much there. Storage is not complete or properly been handled. Agriculture market is not complete. Farmers are not getting right signals about the pricing. And agricultural financing and insurance around the agricultural sectors are also not very good. So India as a country moving forward with having a baggage of low agricultural productivity. So agricultural productivity is going down. Industry was not performing well. And meanwhile, service sector slowdown was very much there because in case of IT and IT enabled services, now what happens, a lot of other countries have come up. So they are competing with India. And by this time of 20 years of good performance of IT sector, the basic salary, wages and cost of doing business in IT sectors has also gone up. So India has gradually become less competitive in IT sectors as at least in the lower part of the value chain. So what was required for India to move to the higher part of the value chain of IT sectors, which also India is not able to move as per the expected growth. So service sectors also slowly, becoming in a kind of a, not stagnant, but it is more or less stabilized to a particular growth. Lastly, the trade, our exports are also not growing. So unfortunately, before COVID, we were already having a situation where our economy was not doing very well. And the COVID part has accentuated this speed. And that's why our growth rate has actually had a nosedive significantly in first two quarters.
Also, what do you think about measures like GST and demonetization? How those two measures impacted India's economic growth?
Yeah, significantly. Demonetization, it has suddenly taken out a lot of money. So what happened, the velocity of money, the flow of the money has gone down. And that means the cash flow in the economy has gone down substantially. And large part of informal economy, by the way, India is just at the lower middle income country. India has not even reached to a higher middle income country. So the informal sector actually consists of a significant sector. So the poor people do not use Paytm or credit card, or they do not have any cashless systems. So of course the cash shortage has not only reduced the cash flow in the economy, but also gave a kind of a signal which has a negative impact on the consumer sentiment. Okay, so consumers have become much more cautious and spending money. So we need to understand that, you know, consumer sentiment is the main driver of a capitalist economic sectors, because that drives the investment, that basically helps the investor to invest more money, and then more goods may come. Just back to back, the GST is also a kind of an issue, because GST was very good approach, because there are a lot of countries in the world has GST, but they were not having a legacy problem. But because in India is having a legacy problem, different kinds of a center-state relationships, and we just overnight changed that. So the I'm not saying the ill treatment, rather I said that, you know, slow and inexperienced, you know, rolling out of GST, what happened actually, they created a lot of confusions. Now, the states are supposed to get the money back, the tax revenues, what the center is earning out of GST, because that's the contract all the time happens between center and state, and their shares. So those shares are not reaching to the states at the right moment. So states are not able to, spend as per their expenditure plan. And that's why, you know, you must have noted that some sectors are outside GST, okay, because of this particular concept, so that states can earn a lot of revenue out of it. And this has become very serious during the time of COVID, because the states are running out of their budget, and there is a borrowing limit imposed on them, though it has been relaxed a bit, but states are looking for their possible rights, what they call, because that's the money should come from centers to the state. But at the same time, center is also having a huge fiscal pressure. So center is also not able to part with the revenue generated. So this basically creates a kind of a major hiccups for all the development expenditure. And in case of GDP, as you know, G, what we call the government expenditure, is a major component of GDP. And that part is getting affected both by the center and state. Okay, so those two issues were definitely, I think. So you need to see, look at the context. Our economy is not doing very well for our own fundamental reasons. Internationally, we are also not very able to perform properly, because our exports are coming down. At the same time, GST as well as demonetization also happened. So all ill timing happened. And there is a kind of a ill luck also is being added to it because of COVID. So this becomes a kind of a quite complicated situations for an economy like India.
So when COVID struck, the finance ministry announced a post-pandemic financial package, which was the Atmanirbhar Bharat package, to help restore the Indian economic growth. So what do you think about this financial measure by the finance ministry?
I see Atmanirbhar package, the details are not yet fully rolled out. That is one particular thing, because we economists also need to understand how it is different from Make in India, okay, what are the changes you have done on Make in India, because we need to understand the pros and cons of Make in India, because some sector must have done well and some sectors could not do. And in case of Atmanirbhar Bharat, we also need to understand strategically in which sectors we need to be, very, very, or less dependent on the rest of the world. For example, during the beginning of the year, when coronavirus mm-hmm. struck the U.S. economy, the U.S. government came out clearly that they were very much dependent on China in case of pharmaceuticals. Okay, so they said that medicine should be considered as a strategic product. And in this case, the U.S. should be more self-dependent. Okay. So in such cases, in our kind of an idea, also need to understand which are the strategic sectors. So far, those informations are not there. So it is very difficult for us to comment on in which direction Atmanirbhar Bharat will be going. But I can assume so a lot of such things that there could be a kind of an effort to reduce the import of some of the goods. But you need to understand that when you try to reduce the import, this might give a negative signal to the international investor community. It should not be the case that because of this strategy, our foreign investment flow goes down. So to make Atmanirbhar Bharat, then suddenly the foreign investment flow in the country goes down. We are already having less money. And if further there is a blow, then there will be problems. So we need to basically walk on a tightrope to bring out the balance, to give the right signal to the world community so that people consider India as an open, fair country to do business. And also at the same time, India is very strong in terms of its economic policy. And there's a clear-cut vision coming out of it.
So according to you, what could be some of the potential interventions by the government to get our economy back on track?
I personally think that immediately, in the short run, medium term, in the long run, in the short run, the consumer sentiment is very important. So India is a large country, and it has a very good investor community inside the country. Okay, so consumer sentiment needs to go up. So if you just step out, you just ask even the vegetable seller, even the local grocery, even the tea shops, like a dukan, you will find out everybody will say that the sales have gone down substantially. Okay, and in some cases, the prices have gone up, right? People may not be going to the grocery stores or to buy dresses. They may be doing online business, but it is not 100% replacement because everybody is scared of coronavirus. And as a result, consumer sentiment has gone down. So you need to find out a way out how actually you will give more money in the hand of the people. Now, what is happening? Suppose if you want to give more money to the states, from the center wants to give more money to the states, and if you consider this is an opportunity to do some hard reform, then states may be thinking twice, and they may not be very much interested to take that. Second one, in many cases, it's a loan, and in case of the financial packages which is coming out, for example. And I can tell you, I know one person who told me that he was trying to get that additional loan at a cheaper rate. He said that, I have two questions. He said that his business is already down. He doesn't know after taking the loan whether the business will improve. He is not having that confidence. So he's saying that, it's a good effort from the government side, but the demand of loan offtake is not there. Second thing, he said that there are procedural problems. For example, he has already has taken a loan from the bank. Okay. And the bank says first you repay those loans and then we'll give you the loan. So it doesn't help. So the government is ready to give the money. But money is not reaching to the people. And money is not reaching to the people. The consumer sentiment is not going up. And as the consumer sentiment is going up, then definitely, in the short run, the revival of the economy is not there. This is the point number one. Point number two, I think the government, this is the right time, and think of giving huge focus on education as a whole. Historically, what we have noted, especially in United States, that when there are boom times, the people do not go to the colleges and universities because it is very easy to get jobs. When there is a recession, actually the kids will go to the college and universities. They try to take one more diploma because they are not getting jobs, so they do not want to get that time wasted. So they try to improve their skill. Okay, so we need to understand in this country at this moment, because there is a major technological change happening due to COVID, and it is now written on the wall that not all jobs will come back. Initially, there is a job losses in the informal sector. Now, people at the formal sectors are losing jobs, which is more dangerous. Because informal sector, people losing jobs, they can get the jobs very easily some other sectors because they do not require a skill. For example, the migrant workers who are working in a construction site, they go back home, they can open up, they can work in some other sectors, maybe in a rice mill sector, maybe in a shop. Okay, so because that doesn't require that much of transition in terms of transition along with the skills. But the skilled workers, when they are losing jobs, they will not get back the jobs so easily, which is basically a kind of a serious issue in which India is getting into. So what is important at this moment, that skill development should be encouraged. So India has a lot of public and private sector level institutions, even at the diploma and certificate levels. But what happens for skill development, there is no loan, educational loan available. For example, if you want to become an engineer, or if you want to study an MBA in a good reputed school, banks will be all the time interested to give you loan. But suppose there is a plumber or electrician, okay, so new technology has come up, or an AC mechanic, okay, so he or she wants to improve his skills, okay, a little bit, maybe a 2 months, 3 months program, for which suppose 20,000 or 30,000 rupees loan is required. Okay, so if he goes to the bank will not give, right? Because there's no collateral and kind of things. So government must push actually money through the banking systems for people's skill development. There should be certified skill development from the public-private partnerships, kind of things, maybe an extension of a vocational schools and kind of things should be there all over the country. And it doesn't take much time to do that. In 2-3 months time, you can actually easily set up that particular structure so that, this becomes a sustainable thing for the long run. And as I said, that the new technology will come. So new job opportunities will come up, and people will easily then actually seamlessly go from one sector to the other sector. So that is in the medium run, which is very important, skill development in the country, because that helps the manufacturing sector also. What I like to add here is India has a peculiar problem, what we call a middle income trap. Okay, so most of the countries who are in the middle income, like Brazil is a country, which is Russia is a country, middle income. The problem of the middle-income country, they cannot become a rich country easily, because they are suffering from two obstacles. One, middle-income countries' productivity is not as high as the developed country, but at the same time, the cost of production is not as low as the lower-income country, because their wages are quite high. Okay, if you go to Brazil or Russia, their wage rate is much higher than India. Okay, but their productivity is not as high as Japan or US or Sweden. So they are suffering from these two particular problems. China is entering into this problem. Okay, because in China, wage rate is going up and China's productivity is not as high as that. So China is trying to make a balance between these two. Unfortunately, India is moving into a middle income trap quite early, because India is right now at the lower middle income level, right? But India's wage rate is rising significantly because a lot of public services and other things are not available, what it should have been. So the cost of living is going up, which is also pushing the wages. Urban lives are quite fast and costly. So companies need to pay higher wages. So wages are going up, but because of not much of skills are there with the people, so those people are not able to work so effectively. So the wages are rising, but the productivity is not rising. And that is India's the most critical challenge. So if government thinks of that next 10 years, our mission should be to improve the skills of the youth. So that, you know, not everybody has to become engineer. So there should be a whole lot of subjects, whole lot of areas where actually the country needs people. And actually there's a huge shortage. Okay, and so in every area there should be, skill centers in every town, in every cities. If there are, then definitely there will be no new jobs will be coming up. And that is the way actually India can move forward.
Please rate our podcast and leave a comment if you like it. Underreported and underrepresented stories can become mainstream only if it reaches more people. So please support us by visiting our contributing page on our website, sunoindia.in, or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.